Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 99, the Gretzky, which is like a weird number for me to say out loud because it's a thing. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. Today's guest, this is going to be a really cool conversation. Shout out to Bev for making this happen. So please, name and who you are.
Mitch Jacobson. And Jeff, it is such an honor to be here, especially on the Gretzky. I am the janitor, the receptionist, the founder and the CEO at Revita Energy Tea. It's this crazy drink in a pouch. You've had some heavy hitters on this podcast, so hopefully I don't leave you too underwhelmed being the pouch tea in a pouch guy.
It's so funny, like we were talking off camera about it, right? Like they're, you've kind of seen this show like just kind of do its thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, every once in a while there's some like giant person that shows up, which is, but then there's, it doesn't matter how successful they are or how big their name is, you know, they're just, once they get in here telling their story, everyone just gets like, everyone's on the exact same level because there's just all these stories behind where they are. So that's why this is going
to
be awesome.
Yes. Isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. You know, all these uber successful people, and I've been very blessed to meet some of the same people you've had on the podcast,
totally.
But you sit them down and they all have phenomenal stories, mm-hmm. and most of them have overcome tremendous adversity.
Totally. Yeah, and the other interesting piece is like that imposter syndrome idea.
Yes.
You know, there's some spectacular people when they're saying that, like they're saying it out loud. I'm like, seriously?
Right?
Yeah. Like, but yeah, man, I think it's, this is just a cool experience. Just kind of hear these stories for the first time and just in a very authentic way. So thanks for coming.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. You've done such a beautiful job, and 99 podcasts mm-hmm. is no small feat. That's mm-hmm. a lot of commitment and dedication.
Yeah, dude, it's fun to do 99 with you, and then, you know, rolling in through the hundreds is going to be just another wild experience. So
yeah, the triple digit club. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's rare air.
Weird. So yeah, man, you've seen a few of these. So take it back as far as you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did I come up with this crazy idea to the market? So, you know, it really started for me even as a kid. So I'm born and raised in Calgary here.
Awesome.
I'm as Calgary as it gets. And I was born into an entrepreneurial family, but not in the conventional sense. So when I was born, small kid, my dad was working in oil and gas for a number of companies, maybe you've even done work with Devon mm-hmm. Energy and some of those ones.
Yeah. Crazy.
And my parents were entrepreneurial in the sense that when my dad was in his early 20s, right before he met his mom, he had actually started an oil company with some partners and it failed. They drilled some wells that didn't produce very well. So it set them back financially, my parents, about a decade. Mm. So even as a young kid, I'm growing up seeing my dad just bust his ass, right? Mm-hmm. Work ridiculously long hours downtown. And that really instilled in me this work ethic, right? Yep. My mom's at home looking after us. She had quit her job working with handicapped people to look after us kids. And my dad's working so hard. Mm. And then the first big, I think, epiphany for me, or big altering moment in my life, is when I was 9 years old, my dad was diagnosed with lung cancer. And he didn't smoke. This was like a very rare case of lung cancer. He had to get an operation where they removed half of one of his lungs. And I got to see him go through this recovery. Never complained. Never watched him complain. He had 6 months off from his job. He went back in three, even though he was paid for 6 months. So mm-hmm. I got to see this man and his drive and what it really meant to provide for a family.
Yep.
And then, you know, he was worried about his health. What if this lung cancer comes back? I can't provide for my wife and kids.
Yep.
And he went to get life insurance, couldn't get it, right? He's uninsurable now. And that's when in his early 40s, he went and started his engineering company. Mm. So still had a mortgage on the house, right? Not a lot of savings, took this massive risk. And mm-hmm. so me as a teenager now got to watch my dad start this business from nothing. And that's what really sparked the entrepreneurial drive in me.
Did you, when your dad's busting his ass working all the time, was he... I'll explain why I'm going down this path. What did he, what was he like when he came home? You know, when he's busting his ass all the time, is he stressed out? Is he like, short with you guys? Or is he just like happy to, is he okay to just be at home and relax?
He was, you know, I know he was very stressed, and I have these conversations with him now too, right? He went through a lot of adversity in his career, right? Missing mm-hmm. promotions and working really hard, didn't feel like he got his due.
Yep.
But when he came back, I have no bad memories with my dad. He mm-hmm. was at every basketball game. Mm-hmm. He was always present with us kids. So he really showed me what it was like to be a phenomenal father, but also to do everything possible to provide for your family, like taking me into to his office on Saturdays, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He's working on Saturdays. You feel it's like a field trip. Yeah. He's just covering two boxes, right? I'm working and I'm childcare at the same time.
Yeah, childcare. He tells this hilarious story where one time his boss walks in on a Saturday and I'm playing with Legos on the floor or whatever, and his boss is mad about something and he goes, "Jesus Christ," takes the Lord's name in vain. And I go, "Jesus?" Because I had just been to church, right? Or whatever. And his boss goes pale white. So yeah, that's how I grew up. And, you know, I think that was really the foundation for what I'm doing now. Because, you know, he taught me both of my parents taught me the sacrifices that it takes to start a company from nothing.
Did you, the reason I'm taking you down this path is because, so my dad was a fireman and built houses for 35 years.
Yes.
But also had built a house in the 80s when interest rates were at like 18%.
That's right, yeah.
You know, almost lost the house, had to work 5 jobs, you know, like moving furniture, parking cars. Like he just worked. My mom looked after the 3 of us. And so that work ethic is something that I've been thinking about recently, is like, there was never any talk about like hard work is kind of the thing that kind of gets you to where you want to go. Never.
Yeah.
But when you're watching it, when you know that like dad probably just worked, I don't know, 90 hours that week.
Yeah.
And he was around, came to the hockey game, soccer game, like he was always coaching, doing whatever. But that work ethic, that's the one thing that I'm starting to like uncover with my world right now, is like, how am I able to do what I'm doing? It's not like magic skill or knowing more than most people. It's just dead work.
It is.
And did you figure these lessons out later in life? Like, when did you start connecting the dots? You're like, okay, I watched my parents operate in a certain way, and now here we go.
Yeah, well, I think it really clicked for me recently, right? Yeah. It's, you know, I don't think you can fully understand or grasp what your parents went through until you get older, right? And you understand the financial stresses they were under. You don't fully get that when you're a kid.
Yep.
But even, you know, when I was 10, 11 years old, I started playing basketball at a high level. And this was right when my dad had started Cornerstone Engineering. And he started in late 2007. Mm. So right before the economic meltdown. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching him go through just this like horrible couple of first years of business, right? Where he's having to fight, you know, tooth and nail for everything.
Yep.
But that translated over to my basketball, because he would teach me these lessons. You know, if you want to be an exceptional athlete, you know, our family's decently athletic, but we're not by any means, you know, Michael Jordan level athletes.
It's not like natural gift.
Yeah. You're going to have to put in the work.
Yep.
And so I started being that kid that was first to practice, right? My dad would make sure I was the first one there. I'd be the last one to leave. He was staying with me after practice to put extra shots up. Mm. So I think that work ethic started to really develop watching him and my parents go through that very difficult period of time getting a company off the ground.
It's so cliche, like work ethic, right?
It is.
But I think it's like, it's not a given.
No,
you know, it's like, not. And I think of what's really interesting is just listening to people, like whatever success looks like, right? From afar, nobody really knows. Are they actually making money, or are they just putting on a show where they look successful? But it's just that work ethic that nobody really, I think you can always see who's really doing the work because they do it quietly.
They do.
You know, it's just like head down, do your thing. Don't talk about how hard it is. You just do your work.
You do the work. And there's no entitlement there, right? And I think that, you know, gritty work ethic is a bit of a lost art nowadays, right? We've been too far removed from, you know, my grandparents moving here in the 40s and 50s with nothing, right? We have it too good now.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I try to instill in our company is we work hard, right? Mm-hmm. Like we don't take any days for granted. We're grateful to have this opportunity. Yep. And I learned that just like yourself, Jeff, from my parents.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's amazing. And dude, I'm like, literally I started thinking about this. I've been giving it more thought in the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
So you can imagine, as you're telling your story about your dad, like, you know, your mom doing her thing, your dad doing his thing. And I'm just like, huh. I went through the exact same thing.
Right? Yeah.
It's interesting how these conversations happen at this very succinct time.
Right.
I'm feeling the same thing.
You're feeling the same thing, and we're going through it together and had the same realization, you know, definitely recently of how much my parents sacrificed to get us here. And it's my job now to honor them by putting in the work every single day.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So take me back to your childhood, where how you grew up. I didn't even know. Obviously, I had no idea you were born and raised in Calgary. So. Yes. So run me through what you were up to when I was young.
Yeah, born and raised in Riverbend, actually, down in the southeast. Yeah, and then later moved to Darbour Lake in the northwest part of the city. But had a great childhood. You know, I've heard you talk about it in other podcasts. I was on my bike every day outside. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very fortunate that I grew up in the time, you know, where I just missed social media. when I was a young kid, right? Yeah. So I spent my days outside, you know, shooting hoops, playing street hockey, you know, making snowmen and igloos and stuff in the wintertime. And I'm really grateful for that because I think it's a lot harder for kids nowadays, right? Where you have an iPad in your hand at four years old sometimes. Totally. Yeah. And then, yeah, watch my dad go through lung cancer. Mm-hmm. And then when he started his business is really when I started taking basketball very seriously. And that was the first time where I really felt a deep purpose in my life. Mm. Like basketball was going to be a big part of my life forever. That's what I thought. And it became my driving passion from 10 to 18 years old. No, at the peak of it, I got to play on the cadet national team when Andrew Wiggins was there and Nick Stauskas and some of these guys that made the NBA. Mm. And a lot of what I've learned about entrepreneurship has come from basketball. That gritty, relentless work ethic, right? You know, I got to see it with some of these guys that ended up making the NBA. It's not just that they were more talented. Their work ethic was sickening, right? You know, when I thought I was the hardest working guy in the gym, these guys were like, they'd be there 2 hours before me, some of them. You know, they were dribbling a tennis ball on the way to practice. Like, they didn't miss a second to get better in the day. And I really try to carry that forward now, you know, into my professional career.
It's so, it's interesting that sport piece.
Yes.
Well, we'll get there. And I'm gonna reference a guy that's on the show. His name's Ryan Smith. Played for Team Canada. He's rugby.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And Ryan's on this he's on this, it's not a mission. He's just on this thought process of sharing moments in sport and tying them to business.
Yes.
And he's like, it's so cliche and some people might think that, but he's like, there's life lessons in sport that are transferable into any business.
100%.
So it's not cliche.
It's not cliche at all. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So how'd this basketball thing start? Like where'd the athleticism come from? And was like sport always in the family? Like were you always doing something?
Yeah, we grew up playing soccer, right? And I never really got into hockey, but played some, you know, soccer and those types of things when I was a little kid. But when I was 9, 10 years old, I was 6 feet taller.
Well, you're a monster. How tall are you?
I'm 6'7" now. Yeah, so yeah, I'm a big boy, right?
The camera's jacked right now.
So, you know, by 10 years old, everyone's asking me, right? Do you play basketball? You should be playing basketball. So God bless my mom. She just enrolled me without even telling me. She just put me on the community team. And I went, and one of the things I struggle with soccer is sometimes it wouldn't keep score. It wasn't really competitive, right? Yep. The soccer that I played in. So I never got that competitive rush. Mm. But my very first basketball game, I'll never forget, it clicked. We were counting score and we wanted to win and we won. Mm. And that feeling of winning, I remember the moment so vividly.
No way.
I've been chasing that feeling, you know, the rest of my life. Mm. And so just like you said, I think sport really intersects with business in so many ways.
Yeah.
Because what it takes to be a great athlete is the same thing that it takes to be a great entrepreneur. Mm. The dedication, the commitment, the drive to win. And then once you win, understanding that you're only as good as your last performance, so you need to get up and win again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so all of those lessons that I learned playing relatively high level basketball now has been such a great asset as a business owner.
Do you, you played at a really high level. Obviously, because you said
relatively.
I was like, holy shit. when you're sometimes, did you ever have the feeling when you're playing sport and your friends and your peers are either like going to university or they're getting married, they're kind of progressing down this traditional path? Did you ever think at all that you were kind of missing out on things because you were so driven around sport? Did you ever feel like this sport thing was like it's all consuming? You had this idea of where you wanted to get to. Did you ever feel like you're being left behind in the real world? These traditional things that people were achieving?
Yes. Yeah. It's funny you say that because I still feel like that. It's something that I still struggle with. And I think I struggle with it, you know, more now than probably ever. Certainly as a teenager playing sports, you know, everyone's going to parties and they're living your normal teenager life, right? And I'm in the gym.
Yeah.
Like I'm getting up early and practicing before school, after school. I'm not drinking. I'm not doing that stuff because my entire focus was to be the best basketball player I could be. Mm. And then, you know, a decade later when I start my business, you know, now 4 years in, right? Still not taking a paycheck. Things are hard. You know, just had my 30th birthday and, you know, around 30, that's when my friends they're getting married, right? And they're buying houses and they're buying new cars. They're established in their career now because they've been out of school for 8, 9 years. Yep. And here I am just like gritting it out Saturdays and Sundays. And it is really hard some days to deal with that, I think, right? But that's the necessary sacrifice it takes to build something great.
And that's why That's why I think when you allocate that much time and energy into sport, it's not like a waste of time. You know, like you're learning so many things that you don't understand at the time. And then when it's over and you then take all this energy and throw it into this, it works.
It works, mm-hmm. right? And I struggled with that for a long time. I stopped playing basketball at 18. A number of things happened. I got to a moment in my life and, you know, I'm a person of faith and I had this moment where it was just like, okay, it's time to move on. This isn't for me anymore. Tons of injuries and a whole bunch of issues. Could have proceeded. Yeah. You know, ultimately I wasn't good enough too, was part of the problem. Mm-hmm. But it took me a long time to make peace with that.
Yeah.
And I think just recently, you know, within the last few months, I've made peace with the fact that my basketball career wasn't a waste because it taught me the lessons that I needed to start this business and to help people with this company.
Yeah. Yeah, man, because you could wrestle with that, right?
Right, yeah.
Whatever that, because it's you know, that transition out of sport can be intense. You know, like when it is who you are.
It's your identity, yes.
And then when you take that away, that's a heavy moment to try and figure out like what's next or who am I or where am I going? So
it was some of the darkest few years of my life because my entire identity as a young kid, right? Was everyone's telling me I'm this 6'5", 11-year-old, right? Dunking already by 12 years old. Mm-hmm. People are like, you're making the NBA. I thought for sure that was going to be my life. And then when that doesn't materialize, you lose your identity and you almost have to rebuild who you are. But as tough as that was, I'm so glad that I went through it because it led me to, you know, starting this company. Mm-hmm. And
when you, did you like those dreams of like making, like playing pro ball?
Yes.
Were they intense? And was it like on a map? Like that was your direction you were going? Like
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. From 10 to basically 18 years old. Mm-hmm. Really was, that was my life's purpose.
Was it, was the idea to go play like NCAA Div 1 and then go to the NBA or what was the vision?
Yeah. The vision was to play Div 1 and then eventually make the NBA. Yep. And at the time UBC was trying to transition over to a Div 2 or a Div 1 basketball team. So I was committed to UBC and then I got injured and in grade 12, a number of things happened and decided to come back to Calgary here and take engineering at the University of Calgary. Mm. Ended up redshirting for the team and I didn't have the passion anymore.
Do you think it was, did the injuries take away the passion or was it like too intense for 8 years that you're just like, you couldn't give anymore?
Yeah. I think a little bit of both. Mm. Yeah. You know, the stars really didn't align. You know, I ended up moving out in grade 12. I moved to Penticton to play basketball out there. So I was closer to the UBC coach. Mm-hmm. Ended up having all sorts of issues with the team.
Yeah.
Tons of injuries. And it was just, you know, it felt like everything that could have went wrong, you know, went wrong. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of people that persevere through things like that. But I really felt at the end of that I was being called to do something different. Mm. That just... this was no longer my calling anymore. I can remember the moment I lost the passion for it. So I think I had gotten grinded down by the adversity, but I also think, you know, and I think this is what's helped me make peace with it now is that just wasn't what was meant for my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah. When you come to that realization, your family's like fully supports you and trust what you're feeling.
They were actually kind of who helped me come to the realization. You know, I remember having a conversation with my dad and he's like, look, like you've put in the work, you know, I don't think this is meant to be, right? Why don't you follow in my footsteps and take the entrepreneurial path and let's get your education and let's go from there. Like this.
And that was a conversation?
Yeah, that was a conversation with my dad. Yeah.
Because that's rare, isn't it? To have like, I'm not a parent, but I just... there's no way my parents would have ever sat me down and be like, this might be a good idea. You know, they were just like, figure it out, you know, but even the entrepreneurial idea, that's a wild card.
That's a wild card, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do take responsibility for it too. I wasn't good enough and I could have worked harder. And if I could go back, I would do a lot of things differently. Mm-hmm. But I really did get to a point in my life where I just felt like, okay, I don't think this is my calling anymore. It's time to do something different.
So when they say that, come back, engineering.
Yes.
Think about your own business idea. You were just like, okay.
I was like, okay. Because ever since I was a kid, you know, I had that ingrained in me that eventually I was going to be an entrepreneur and it was going to be in oil and gas. So the only university in Canada, other than the U of A, I guess, but U of C and U of A offer petroleum engineering as a course. And so being from Calgary, it just made sense to come back here. Let's get through the first year and then reevaluate. And then that's when I redshirted for the University of Calgary team.
Yep.
And it was just, I enjoyed it, but the passion just wasn't there anymore, yep. right? I seen a future in this industry following in my father's footsteps. And that had become my new new passion and my new purpose. And so after that year of redshirting, I told the coach that I was done and that was the end of it.
Wow. And redshirting is like practice. You're with the team. You're with the team all year.
You're with the team all year. You don't play in any of the games. You just go to, you practice and then you sit on the bench during games. So loved it. Amazing group of guys on the team. Incredible coach. He's won multiple national championships now. It just wasn't.
You're done.
I was done. Yeah. I was ready to move on to the next chapter.
So school, you like all in, finish it in.
Yeah, finished it in 4 years. Yep. So banged up petroleum engineering. And during those 4 years, and something happened that ultimately led to this business. So my best friend at the time, he was 21 years old and he loved energy drinks. He was working up on the rigs in Northern Alberta, right? And those guys crush energy drinks. So we'd go out to the bars or whatever, and he'd drink like five or six in a night. It wasn't uncommon. And I was with him at the end of the night one time, and I'll never forget, he goes pale white, clutches the left side of his chest and nearly passes out, like almost stops breathing. So I rush into the emergency room and I'm waiting in this little room for the doctor, and the doctor walks in and he says, you're not gonna believe this, but your friend, 21 years old, he's gonna be okay, he's gonna be fine, but he had a heart attack from energy drinks.
No way.
We think it's from the energy drinks. And so here I'm like 20 or 19 at the time. I'm like, what in the world is in these drinks, right? Mm-hmm. And that always bothered me, right? But planted a seed that something's wrong here.
Yeah.
Well, fast forward a few years later, I get out of school. I'm working in oil and gas. And ironically, I'm an energy drink addict, right? I'm the guy in the business suit downtown Calgary walking around with a
monsters or whatever it is.
Crushing a monster, right? I get teased at the office sometimes. Well, I end up starting to get adverse health effects myself. I'm not sleeping at night. I'm like getting heartburn for the first time in my life. Cut the energy drinks out, goes away. So this is, you know, what ultimately led me down this path is something's wrong here, right? Like what is in these drinks and why is there not a healthy alternative? I looked everywhere on the market for something that was all natural, non-carbonated, clean ingredients, couldn't find it. And that was what was really the light bulb moment that led me down this path to create this crazy drink in a pouch.
So what are you doing in the oil and gas industry? So you graduate, and was the idea, run me through the idea once you graduate, what did your like vision look like?
Yeah, so my vision was always to start an oil company, right? I wanted to start my own company one day. I wanted to follow in my dad's footsteps, just like when he was in his early 20s and started his oil company, even though it wasn't successful.
Yeah.
But I thought I would be an entrepreneur in the oil and gas industry. And ever since I was a young kid, like a teenager, my dad talked about Tourmaline Oil Corp because it was one of his clients at Cornerstone. And he spoke so highly of this man, Mike Rose, right? Which we were talking before the podcast. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of the best entrepreneurs ever, right? Incredibly humble. So I wanted to go work for him. So I got a job at Tourmaline. It was my dream job.
So how do you make that happen? You have this idea of working for this, like the place.
Yes.
You're thinking about it. So how do you actually make it happen?
Well, they were just started taking summer students at the time. So I did everything I could to get an interview. And like I applied, you know, anyone I could get a hold of over there through my dad, I was sending a note.
All favors.
Got this interview and I left it all on the table. I've never tried so hard in an interview. I wanted that job so bad. Got an opportunity in the summer there when I was in university and right away made a game plan, right? Like how am I gonna transition this summer opportunity into a full-time career? And I looked at some of the other summer students there and they're like, okay, they're coming in at 8. I'm gonna come in at 6:30. They're just leaving at 4:30. I'm gonna leave at 5:30 or 6. Right. And my dad told me too, like, if you're going to work there, there's no way you are embarrassing me. So you have to leave it all in your career. And that's what I did. I went in that summer. I was coming in at 6:37, which was unheard of for a summer student, working extra long hours, coming in on the weekend if I could. And when I got that opportunity, I just made sure that I worked so hard. There was no way they weren't going to hire me out of school. And I'm so blessed they gave me an opportunity out of school as a water engineer, which was a new role in oil and gas, which was at the time I was a little disappointed. Yeah. I think I wanted to be like a drilling or patrol, like a production engineer.
Yeah.
But this water engineer is a new role and the role was built around. It's crazy,
it's
right?
So ridiculous.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
The role was built around helping Tourmaline and other oil companies recycle more water for their fracking and operations, right? Mm. So here, you know, probably the only role in the whole company that would carry over to my career now as an entrepreneur in beverage was this water sustainability engineering role. And that's what they gave me, even though it wasn't the one that I wanted, right? And I was a little bit disappointed at the time, but it's so incredible looking back how blessed I was to get that position. And I just had the most amazing experience at the company there. They're a phenomenal company. And I learned a lot about sustainability, recycling, was able to have an impact on the environment. So, which is ultimately that background is what led me to choose the pouch over a can or a glass bottle, because I had a background in looking at environmental data, carbon footprint, that type of thing. So it's just wild, hey, how...
It's so funny. That's why this is... That's why this, like, this experience to actually hear the story behind it is so fascinating, because people look at this and they're just like, okay, there's an idea, and, you know, they probably, like, did some research on product, you know, and... But why is he making it? You know, why has this been around for 4 years and doing successful, whatever that means?
Yes.
But there's all these weird experiences. It's like work ethic, water engineer, like sustainability piece early in oil and gas.
Right.
Like you're learning all these things to pull this off.
To pull this off, right? Like, you know, there's a couple hundred roles at Tourmaline, right? There was one opening for a water engineer and it was a new role. It didn't even exist in oil and gas really at the time. And here's me, that's where I end up. And it's the one position helps me now.
You learn it all.
And what I'm doing.
That work ethic, obviously it's the exact same thing you did in Ball.
Yes.
Show up early, leave late. To do that in the workforce, it's rare, right?
It's rare, yeah.
As basic as that is to the work your ass. And sometimes it's like, some people don't agree with like, just show up early to show up early and stay late just to be late.
Yes. You know,
there's like
don't do that. Yeah.
But like if you want to overperform or just like really dig in, it's simple to show up early and stay late.
Yeah. If you really want something, you'll do it, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're younger, right? When you're just getting out of school and, you know, typically you don't have a ton of financial or family commitments. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you put in that work, right?
But your friends weren't doing it, were they?
No. You know.
But it's also you're out. The other thing too is, you know, that makes you stand out, but your friends also weren't dead. I'm guessing maybe there's a couple that were dedicating that kind of energy to sport.
To sport, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, right? Yes.
It's like, it's not normal.
Yes, but that same approach that makes you a great athlete, right, is the same thing that would make you great within a company. And it would also, it's the same approach that's going to make you a great entrepreneur.
Yeah.
There's no shortcuts, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you see this with all your guests, you know. Mm-hmm. Gersh at Zena Renewables, James, these guys, they might not talk about it, but they have savage work ethics, right? Like they are ruthless with their work ethic and it shows what they've accomplished.
That sustainability piece in oil and gas, you know, it's like a hot conversation now.
Absolutely, yeah.
When you first started, it was the kind of early days of like people trying to figure that out?
Yeah, I think so. And it was really cool because we were able to pioneer, like we built the first recycled water pit, first two actually in Alberta. Mm-hmm. So we've saved like, I would guess it'd be millions of cubic feet of water now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that conversation was always very prevalent, right?
Yep.
And I don't fully understand it because the oil and gas that we produce in especially Alberta, BC as well, anywhere in Canada, is the most ethically produced, highest standard, most environmentally responsible oil and gas in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm certain of that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it should be the opposite conversation. We should be trying to promote it and export it everywhere because it's the cleanest possible oil and gas that you can produce, right? Yeah. And I'm all for renewables. I think that's great. But I don't understand sometimes why our industry here gets demonized when they're doing such a good job of being, you know, I worked as a full-time career, right, in sustainability and oil and gas. Mm-hmm. So I'm really proud of a lot of our oil and gas companies here. They're doing a tremendous job.
I agree. So what did it look like on the out of there? So what's happening as you're there? Are you like feeling inspired to continue down this path, or was this like I need to do my own thing starting to creep up?
Yeah, well, I loved the company.
Yeah.
Like absolutely loved working there, loved the people I worked with. But I felt this, I had it since I was a kid, right? That I wanted to do my own thing. I just had this calling.
What'd that look like when you were a youngster? So for me, it was literally winter, I'd walk door to door, knock on houses, and shovel yes, driveways.
That's what I did.
Summertime, I would grab my dad's lawnmower, push it around Strathcona, and knock on people's doors and try and get like contracts for the summer.
Yes.
So like, did you have those and other things that were like this self-starting idea?
We have the exact same story basically. So before I started playing basketball, that's what I would do in the wintertime. So my buddy and I, we would go door to door and we would shovel people's walks, mm-hmm. you know, in the wintertime and made pretty decent money doing it,
for
right?
Sure.
Like as a young kid.
Yep.
And so I think that's where that spark was there. And then it was, you know, I had gumball machines at the house. So every time my parents had friends over, I'd make sure
no they would
use my gumball machines. Like I had all these little rinky dink businesses. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have continued forward. But then I found my passion for basketball.
Yep.
And I call basketball like my first failed business. I think, mm-hmm. you know, all of that entrepreneurial energy, I transferred over to athletics.
Yep.
But I always had this deep down urge that it was either going to be a professional basketball player, which is effectively an entrepreneur, if
yep.
you think about it,
yep.
or do my own thing.
Hmm.
So even though I love Tourmaline, I love the people there, I, you know, even after this, I'm going to meet with one of the guys I used to work with at Tourmaline.
Awesome.
But I just felt this calling that I needed to do my own thing.
Hmm.
And the deeper I got into the industry, the starting an oil company, you know, in your 20s, in this economic climate, right? Mm-hmm. This is 2016 to 2020, right? When
yeah.
things in oil and gas weren't great. It's a little bit unrealistic, right?
Right.
It can be done.
Yep.
I'm not making excuses. It can be done. But that's what started getting me thinking about, okay, what's some other business opportunities I could potentially pursue?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, you know, I started having these adverse
mm-hmm.
issues with mm-hmm. the energy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what ultimately led me down this path
of this tea in
yeah.
a pouch.
Tea in a pouch.
So what are you doing? So obviously you're not feeling good, and then you start doing a bunch of research.
Yeah, I start doing a bunch of research. I'm like, okay, what is causing some of this? And I'd really gotten into fitness at the time, mm-hmm. so
like back into it. Like when you were playing ball, were you like into fitness because you had to?
Yeah, I was into fitness because I had to.
Yep.
And then when I, 19, 20 years old, I'm done playing basketball,
yep.
I started looking for something else, right? Because
yep.
I needed that competitive drive. Like that feeling I talked about winning a basketball mm-hmm. game. When you're an athlete, that doesn't go away. You need that mm-hmm. rush, right? And unfortunately, some athletes, when they finish their career, they get it from other places, right?
Yep.
It's oftentimes not good things. Like,
yep.
Gambling, I've been there. It can be drinking, it could be yep. all sorts of things. But I really went to the gym, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, got into lifting weights and loved it, but I needed a competition. So I started competing in powerlifting, and then powerlifting transitioned over to men's physique. I did one of those shows, if
no
you can
way.
Believe it. And so in doing all of that, again, it's crazy how this has all led me here, but I really started learning about nutrition,
hmm.
right? Understanding macronutrients, understanding how your body actually processes foods and what ingredients are good for you. I became that shopper that would go to the grocery store and look at the back of every mm-hmm. label, right? And so that kind of coincided with this energy drink thing. Yeah, I'm drinking the sugar-free ones, but
yeah. you think you're making a good choice.
I think I'm making a good choice,
yeah.
but these artificial sweeteners, the taurine, there's chemicals on there I can't even pronounce, let alone understand what they do to your body. So I'm like, there has to be a more natural solution, right?
Hmm.
Like coffee does a pretty good job. Why isn't there just a more natural energy drink out there that's not carbonated, doesn't have all these chemicals in there? And that's what, all of these experiences combined is what led me down the path.
Hmm. Crazy, man.
It is wild, yeah.
It doesn't, there's all these different paths.
Yes.
But they all make complete sense for why you're doing what you're doing right now.
Why
right?
I'm doing what I'm doing, right?
Like it's almost, I don't want to use perfect, but it's like, it's all there.
It's
like,
laid out, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
yeah, it's from the outside looking in, yeah, petroleum engineer, great career downtown to transition mm-hmm. to selling tea in pouches,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a wild 180.
Mm-hmm.
But when you, yeah, really, when I think back at my life story,
yeah.
it's all led me to this point. And that's given me a lot of peace, even
yeah.
with, it's been a very challenging 4 years. A lot of things haven't went the way that I thought they would go.
Yeah.
But I have this deep feeling deep down that this is what I'm meant to do and mm. I have to persevere through it.
So you start doing the research.
Yes.
And so you start you start researching products, ingredients, just like the nutrition side of things. And then you're thinking there's an opportunity to make something.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I had no idea how to get started, right? I get kind of this idea, healthy energy drink, but how do you start a healthy energy drink company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like what's even step one? I didn't even know step one. So I made this commitment to myself. I'm like, okay, again, this comes from athletics. Like I want to be a better free throw shooter. I was going to shoot free throws every day, right? Mm-hmm. I want to figure out how to start this business. I'm going to do work on it every day. And I was just, my goal was one thing a day. And in the beginning, it would just be a Google search. That'd mm-hmm. be my one thing. How do you start an energy drink company? How do you do this? Literally, that was my one thing, right? So everything you see today, we're in like 1,200 stores now, have our own manufacturing line, started with a Google search, right? How do you start an energy drink company? So I start, and then, you know, the Google searches led me to this book. It was like how to build a beverage company book. I get this book, I'm reading this book, I'm messing around with ingredients in my kitchen, but I figured out right away I had no idea what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I was like mashing up caffeine pills and tea bags and stuff, and tasted terrible. But in my research, like 3 or 4 months down the road, I discovered that most startup food and beverage companies use a food scientist. I didn't know what a food scientist was, didn't know they existed, but they exist to help entrepreneurs like myself formulate a drink or a food product and get it commercialized. So I started cold calling these food scientists.
And this is all while you have a full-time job, right?
This is all while I have a full-time job.
Yeah. Upside after hours.
After hours. And one thing that I'm, you know, I'm really proud of is I didn't let my job performance slip. Yeah. This was out of the office. This was my personal time that I was using. I was still working the 10-hour days, making sure I got my work done. And then in the evenings and weekends, instead of going out with my buddies or whatever, I was working on this. Mm. So I'm doing this research, make some of these cold calls to food scientists, and I end up finding one that's willing to help me, right? Got some no's or got some, you know, it was like $40,000 it was going to be, which I couldn't afford. Mm-hmm. And so I finally find one in Canada that was going to help me. Mm. And it was $10,000 to get started, which I didn't have at the time.
Because it's a big number, right?
It's a big number, right? Yep. So that was the first, like, this is real moment.
Right? So what did that feel like? And I'm sitting on an idea too that's going to take like a capital investment.
Yes.
And it's like causing me a little bit of stress. You know, it's on my brain to like, it's a big step, right?
Yes.
So what's running through your brain when $10,000 is not in your bank? This idea is a total stretch because you have no experience in it.
Yes.
What actually caused you to say, okay, I'm going to do this?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it was previous experience, right? It's kind of human nature. You typically want to do something, right? You want to start a business, you want to run a marathon, you want to get in shape, but you always have that escape hatch, right? I'm going to start my diet on Monday. How many times have I said that, right? So most people said that. And then Monday at lunchtime comes around and you have a cheeseburger and a beer and you're like, oh, well, I'll just start next Monday. Is this week shot, right?
There's going to be another one.
Yeah, you give yourself an escape hatch. Mm. But if you're going to throw $10,000 at something, you're kind of removing that escape hatch, right? So it was terrifying because I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work. Like, what business do I have getting into beverages, right? No, like, I've come from an oil and gas family. Like, I don't think anyone's even worked in a grocery store in my family line, right? Let alone started a food or beverage company. But it was terrifying. But then when I did it, it was almost a sense of relief because it's like, now I have to pursue this,
right?
I don't have the escape hatch anymore. I'm starting that diet on Monday, basically, right? No matter what.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for startup entrepreneurs is at a certain point, you have to get rid of your plan B, right? Because you do your best work when your back's up against the wall.
Yeah.
And that was the first moment. And I didn't even have 10,000 cash. I'd use my student line of credit that I still had. You had like a grace period getting out of school, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I used debt to finance the company initially. And it was terrifying, but it was also a sense of relief because it's like, okay, now I can really commit to this.
Because it is exhausting when you're on the fence, when you're waffling.
Yes.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
Because you're running all these different scenarios.
Yes.
Through your head. You're like, what if, high, low, like you're all these different outcomes.
Yes.
So it makes sense what you're saying. Because once you actually take that step, you're like, okay.
Once you take that step,
it's all kind of behind you.
And it was really the same thing when I quit my job, right? Mm. This was early 2020. We'd done like a small production run. I had some product out of my house
What does it actually look like? So you find the scientist.
Yeah.
Make something and then, so yeah.
Absolutely. So I find this food scientist, right? $10,000, which money I didn't have. So this is terrifying. So I pay him the 10 grand and I did a ton of research. And I came up with this little proposal. I still have it. It's like a 3-page document of like the ingredients I wanted, the ingredients I didn't want. And I'm like, okay, read through this and let's put something together. And I had some like crazy ideas. I wanted to use vegan branched chain amino acids, which nobody knows what those are. But I was like, oh, people, this is like, a, you know, from my fitness world, right? It'll do good. And so yeah, I spend all this money, and I'll never forget, you know, a couple months later, they ship you samples. So they actually put together like
crazy.
They make the drink, right? Mm. They use your guidance and they order the samples of the ingredients and then they put it together. And so I get home from work one day. I got this box on, you know, my front porch. And I'm like, oh, here's the drink. Here's the drink that's going to change my life, change the world, right? So I don't even try it right away. I wait till the weekend and I have all my friends and family over for a blind taste test because I read somewhere that you're supposed to do a blind taste test, right? Didn't even know what it was. I got like party cups, you know, like those red beer pong cups. Yeah, yeah. Right? It's like, it's how unprofessional it looked. And I labeled them with a marker, like A through E or whatever. And I had this sheet of paper that everyone had to fill out. So I'd put, I don't know, Red Bull, vitamin water, like a bunch of drinks in these. And yep. One of the cups was my drink. So everyone comes over, everyone that I care about at the time. And they're, you know, doing the taste testing and I collect the sheets at the end and I'm reading through it. Like sample A, you know, tastes familiar, love this, tastes great. Sample B, amazing, had this before. Sample C, a little sweet, but like it. I get to sample D and it's like, tastes like battery acid. Would never drink this again. What is this horrendous drink? And I'm like, what's sample D? And I look at my sheet, I'm like, sample D, that's my drink. That's my formula. I spent all this money with this food scientist for this drink to taste terrible. So that's where this started, right? Is I didn't know what I was doing, right? I gave this food scientist, I learned later, you know, a set of guidelines that was just unrealistic without tons of R&D, right? Like vegan branched chain amino acids and stuff. And right in that moment, I was ready to quit. I was like, okay, maybe this just isn't meant to be.
Yeah.
But I just kept thinking back to my friend that had the heart attack. And I kept thinking back to what my dad did, right? The guy overcome lung cancer to start a company, right? In his 40s with two young kids at home. I'm going to quit because I have one sample that tastes bad, right? Mm-hmm. So we went back to the food scientist and another 2 months later, I get more samples.
And the approach going back the second time, were you still like giving him ideas or were you letting this person run a little bit?
A little bit of both. Yeah. So I have this conversation with them and they were pretty new at the time too. So I think we were fighting an uphill battle, right?
They're sending it like, I don't know.
I couldn't afford the really good ones. So I'm like getting, So we're like, okay, what is, you know, they had a bad aftertaste. So we're like, hey, what's causing the bad aftertaste? Well, you want to use these vegan BCAAs. Well, we got to take that out. Mm. Like, okay. Let's take that out. I don't think that's going to ruin the drink. And then, you know, we try something different.
Yep.
So it was really, you know, just a lot of trials, trying different things. It was research and development, basically, because no one had done a drink like this.
Yep.
And one of the fascinating things is we tried every caffeine source you can imagine, right? Mm. And when we tried caffeine from tea, everyone would report feeling better for longer, like not getting a crash. They wouldn't get the jitters. So we're like, hey, there's got to be something to caffeine from tea. So I start doing research. Well, yeah, sure enough, tea has amino acids that there's studies now showing it can combine with the caffeine molecule and prolong its positive effects. So that's how we ended up. I didn't plan on creating an energy tea. It was just going to be a healthy energy drink, right? Mm. We just happened to get into tea from those trials, right? And I think if our first sample set had tasted good, we probably wouldn't have went in a totally different direction, right? Mm. So that was another cool thing that came out of, as difficult and as expensive as it was, those trials led us to creating the formula we have today.
Mm, crazy. So how long is this R&D period? And is it R&D while you're still working?
It's while I'm still working. Okay. Yeah. So again, evenings and weekends, I'm not letting it affect my career. And I'm a young guy at the time, right? I have no commitment. So I can just do this when I get home at 6:30 or whatever, right? And on the weekends. And so I look back at it sometimes. I wrote a business plan in like 2018, I think. And I thought we were going to launch in like summer of 2018. Like I thought it was gonna be like a 5 month process to do the R&D and get the drink. It ended up, we didn't launch until basically January of 2020.
Wow.
So it was a 2 year process of doing the R&D, getting the Health Canada approvals. Yep. It was a ton of back and forth.
Yep.
I don't even know how many samples we went through with that food scientist.
Hmm.
It would have been hundreds.
And
for sure.
And always paying. Like there's like
always paying. Yeah.
Because the 10 was for the
initial round samples. Round one. I think I'd included a couple of iterations, but we burned through that budget right away. And then it was just a monthly fee. So we were paying by the hour.
Wow.
So here I am at Tourmaline, you know, I have a mortgage and some financial commitments at this point, and I'm paying, you know, $2,000-$4,000 a month, just funding it out of my salary and Christmas bonus and stuff to keep this crazy idea alive when we never made a single sale. So that was a tough period. But again, it was that I'd removed the escape hatch, right? I have to do this because I put all this money in. So it forced me to, my back was up against the wall, right? Like I had to make this work. And that's where the magic happens.
Do you think that happens for everybody? I feel like when some people get pushed into a corner, they wilt.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Listen, you say it out loud. I'm like, dude, I get you.
You
put me in a corner and I'm coming out swinging.
I'm coming out swinging, right?
Just because there's no, you say safety hatch, I say safety net. Like, yes. There's no plan B here.
There's no plan B here.
Like this is
it.
There's no trust. There's no trust fund. I mean, there's no magic financing behind me. This is it.
So
I have to swing.
I would agree. I think, you know, when I think back at my athletic career, I think that's where I trained it, right? Mm-hmm. I can remember some of my early basketball games where I'd get really nervous, like felt like my back was up against the wall, mm-hmm. and then I'd perform terribly, right? Or like not show up mentally mm-hmm. for the game.
Yep.
But when you go through those experiences, I feel like every time you get that back against the wall feeling, you're a little bit more comfortable there, right? And so I do think, some people do wilt.
Yeah.
It's a skill that can be developed, I think, if you put yourself there enough times.
Yeah, experiences.
Yep. Experiences.
So 2 years of R&D.
2 years of R&D, and that was a painful process because here I am, you know, I have this dream, I want to pursue it, but I can't because of all these roadblocks, right? The R&D process has taken a lot longer, and then the self-doubt starts to creep in, right?
Dude, I was just going to ask you that.
The self-doubt starts to... Yeah, there was a lot of periods where I failed on my one thing a day because I would have to take like 2 weeks off mentally because it was just a complete anxiety even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like, how am I going to do this?
Like, the self-doubt's a real, it's funny you brought that up because I was thinking, I'm like, where does this fit into his equation? Because it's a driver, right? That can,
yes.
It's, it just creeps in. It might not overwhelm you, just like it pulls, instead of having all the energy to go forward, I feel like self-doubt just like takes enough energy that you can't move anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I felt that too. And then another challenging part is, you know, I'm getting more established in my career, right? Mm. I'm starting to make more money.
Yeah.
Right.
A promotion or something, a different
title.
Like,
I got a different title at the job. I went from water engineer. They put me in production now. So I was doing like some production stuff, which is what I always dreamed of doing. And so then you start to question, okay, is this even what I really want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was a very turbulent couple of years. And
sorry to interrupt you. Did you talk to anybody about all this when it's happening?
My dad. Yeah.
That was like your one go-to, like.
My dad. Yeah.
So as you're like, have these inner questions, you'd be like,
yeah,
dad, do I have this?
Do I have this? And I'll never forget. I remember the moment we were in Cactus Club downtown. I met him after work one day because I think he was down there for meetings. And this was like 2019, right? And we'd gotten pretty far in the R&D process. We had a formula that was winning the blind taste test now, right? And he's like, what are you doing? Like, when are you going to go? Because like, there's a window here. Like, you can't do both. And he loves the Karate Kid. You probably relate to this. And he referenced this part of the Karate Kid where Mr. Miyagi says, you know, you walk on the left side of the road, safe. Walk on the right side of the road, safe. But you walk in the middle, squish like a grape. And the point of that story was, if you're going to do something, either don't do it or do it full out.
Mm.
Because if you half-ass it, you're going to get squished like a grape.
Mm.
And that one conversation had such a profound impact on me because he's right.
Mm.
You know, you can make a ton of excuses,
yeah,
you know, as to why you're not going to commit fully, but every exceptional guest you've had on this podcast that's accomplished something amazing, they've committed themselves to that full throttle, 100%, right?
Yeah.
And so that was the conversation that ultimately led me to just say, okay, I got to quit my job and go full throttle at this and take the risk.
So was it ready for consumption, like public consumption, like retail? Was it ready for retail or did you quit before... It was retail.
About the same time.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'd done like some trial production runs where we'd get, you know, like 1,000 units type of thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those units we'd get initially, we couldn't even use because they would leak or we'd have issues with them or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, we were kind of in some stores at the time. Like we're in a few retail stores. We were selling in a sock store in the core mall downtown. Doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
Like a couple small grocery stores, but we weren't really getting anywhere.
And it was just you out there talking to people, meeting people and kind of selling the idea.
Yeah. And so I teamed up up with, at the time too, my business partner, two business partners now. So my sister, Carly, was a cardiac nurse. She was working on the cardiac unit as a nurse. And Rob, my best friend growing up, was a geophysicist. So early in this, you know, back in 2018, when I got the idea, I met up with them. I'm like, what do you guys think of this? And so we teamed up, the three of us, and went through this R&D process together. And they quit their jobs, kind of similar timeline. But yeah, late 2019, we'd gotten like a shipment to my house. So I'm still working downtown. I have product in my garage, and on weekends and stuff, we're going to like markets and whatnot. But it's not, you're never going to get anywhere taking that approach, right? Yep. You need, you know, this, especially consumer goods, you need 100% of your attention to even give yourself a chance at making it successful.
You brought up a very interesting story that I almost forgot about, but working with family.
Yes.
I would love to understand. You and your sister must have a very interesting relationship, because, like, you know, family can go one of two ways. It can be the answer, and it could be the thing that tears everybody apart. So
100%.
You trusted it right away that you wanted your sister in on this?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, for sure. And I, you know, because of my parents, right? She was with me seeing what my dad went through, right?
Yep.
And seeing what both my parents went through, seeing the work ethic, right? And she had that same work ethic too. So, you know, that's when people ask me, what's the secret to choosing a good business partner? Well, in my experience, there's two things. Your work ethics have to be aligned. That's a big one, right? Because if one business partner wants to work 7 days a week and the other one values their weekends, you're going to have issues. You're going to clash at some point, right? Yep. And then two, you know, do they bring something to the table that you don't have, right? Because if you're both really good at the same thing, well, you're going to clash.
Yeah.
Well, I'm good at operations and, you know, from working in oil and gas, right? The day-to-day stuff. Carly's a nurse. She's incredible with people. She's really good with sales. She's really organized. I'm not the most organized. So we just complemented each other, which was really unique being a brother and sister duo. So we have a very beautiful relationship. You know, I couldn't ask for a better relationship with my sister, but I agree with you because that, you know, I got very blessed because a lot of times it can go completely the other direction.
That, the trust factor, I feel like, because I don't have any partners with what I do.
Yes.
But the idea of having a partner, like there's got to be this extreme level of trust, you know, like just for to either let them go down the path and make decisions or actually spend money or like whatever it is, like family, you always trust.
Yes. You trust, right? Yeah. I mean, a business partnership is a marriage. Right. My dad makes the joke, it's a marriage without the sex. So basically just a marriage. that's his joke. Yeah. He loves that joke. But it's very true, right? Yeah. It is a marriage, right? Mm. You see this person for sometimes 10, 12, 14 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week, right? So like you have to treat it like a marriage in a lot of ways, right? Because it's probably the most important, other than your significant other, the most important relationship that you're going to have in your life.
Yeah. So crazy, man. I'm just like thinking, I have a younger brother, younger sister.
Yeah.
I was like, could I start a business with them? I'm like, probably. Cause there's just like this, like for me, it's like built in respect, right?
Yes.
The only thing I don't know if being the older brother, if I would have the skill to actually let them like go do their thing,
right? Like,
what are you doing over there?
What are you doing? yeah, and that's where, you know, Carly and I having very differing skill sets, I think we've really complemented each other, because she's not going to tell me how to engineer the production line, and I'm not going to tell her how to pack an order or do a sales call, right? So it's like, we play in different segments of the business. And same with my business partner, Rob, right? He's a brilliant marketing mind. He's a professional photographer. He's worked with some of the biggest, you know, whiskey companies in the world. He just got back from Scotland recently, actually. They hired him to do a photo shoot out there. Awesome. So I don't tell him how to take photos. I don't tell him how to, you know, do some of our marketing, because he's so good at that. And so because we play in different segments of the business,
it works.
It really works. We have our bad days too, don't get me wrong. You know, as a whole, I would say we have something that works quite well.
So you quit?
Yeah, quit my job, man. I'll never forget that moment. You know, I walked into my boss's office one day, and it took me like days to work up the courage to do this, right? Because I was really torn. I loved I love that company. I still do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can tell. This isn't BS.
I keep in touch with the people that are there, and they gave me an amazing opportunity, and I wish them all the best. So it was painful for me to leave. Mm-hmm. I walked into my boss's office and told them, and they were incredibly supportive, which just speaks to their culture too, right? And went back to my office, closed the door, man, and I was just like inconsolable. Mm. It was probably the hardest thing I had done up until that point in my life. Yeah, gave a month's notice and made sure that I finished on a high note, you know, got to see Mike Rose before I left and shake his hand, and he wished me luck, which is like, he has no idea what that meant to me, right? Mm-hmm. This guy's just like my hero. He's the Michael Jordan of entrepreneurship, as far as I'm concerned, Wayne Gretzky of entrepreneurship. So they were very supportive, and January of 2020, which is crazy. My last day was January 31st, 2020. My dad's last day in oil and gas, when he quit his job, coincidentally, we didn't know this till years later, it was also January 31st. So we quit our jobs on the exact same day. So we have an Independence Day celebration every year.
It's a good day.
Yeah, we smoke a cigar and celebrate our independence.
Amazing.
Right? Yeah, it's just wild how that worked. And everyone was so gracious to me leaving. You know, there's multiple people in the office that still order our product every month. Cool. So it's been really neat to have them be so supportive of my journey.
Amazing. So what happened from that moment? It's like, it's all fresh. I'm catching you. And this is the thing, dude, like no research, like zero.
Yes.
And so I have no idea how fresh this is. Cause we're like, you're just like getting your legs under you and like figuring it all out.
Absolutely. Mm. So I quit my job, right? So, you know, now I'm running my own schedule for basically the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. And this is February of 2020. And right away I get a rude awakening into the world of entrepreneurship. So we have a death in the family, a girl I'm seeing at the time, we break up because it's just like, couldn't handle the hours I was working.
Yeah.
So I get off to a bad start right from the get-go, and then the pandemic hits in March. Mm-hmm. So our main marketing strategy at that point had been sampling in grocery stores, right? I would cold approach a grocery store, talk to the grocery manager, get it in the fridge. We'd go do a sampling, get people to try the product. Well, that's ripped away from us now. So, you know, we were in, I don't know, 30 stores or 40 stores at the time.
No way.
Lose the majority of them because of COVID.
Yep.
And again, I'm having this moment of like, what did I do? I just quit my job. I had a bunch of my savings tied up in stocks at the time, which went to effectively nothing. Mm-hmm. So here I lose like half of my savings that I had planned to be an entrepreneur. We lose all our stores. I go through, you know, these like very challenging personal times, and I, you know, was really tested from the get-go. And that's where not having a plan B, I think, really saved me, right? Because I didn't have any other option.
Yeah.
Right, I just quit my job. Mm-hmm. Like, this is it. And my back was up against the wall, and we pivoted, got into Calgary Co-op shortly after that, just from cold calling their office. You're not even supposed to do that. I just cold called Calgary Co-op, like main office one day, asked for the beverage person, somehow.
Got him.
Got a meeting, got into the stores. And that was our first big break. And then we, after that, because we were doing okay in Calgary Co-op, we met with the local manager at Sobeys. And he, you know, Gary, incredible man, so grateful for him. He gave us an opportunity in Sobeys in that summer of 2020 during the pandemic. And that's what really took us to where we are today. Because we went from, you know, 30, 40 stores to being in 300 stores by the end of the year.
Western Canada, or is that Canada?
Just Alberta, basically, that point. And then, you know, took it, just kept grinding every day, right? Approaching new stores. Mm-hmm. We'd get online orders. Every online order at the time, we were hand delivering a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So I would get like, someone would order on our website, and I would drive to your house in South Calgary and deliver it and shake your hand.
Which, laughable
now, right?
But at the time, it's your only move, right?
It's our only move. Yeah. And it created a really loyal following early on of people that were like, wow, they're doing something really cool. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really helped us to expand and grow and find some success in retail, was taking it one customer at a time. Mm. That was really our approach at the beginning, because we started with like three customers, right? And we had to do such a good job for them, like go so far above and beyond for each of those customers, that they tell a friend. And then that friend, we recreate the experience, and then for their friend. And it just goes on and on and on. So it's a really slow way to grow.
Yeah.
But we've went from, you know, in 2020, we were in, 30 stores. Now we're in about 12, 1300 all across Canada now.
Which is a big number, right?
Yes.
Like,
it's a start.
Yeah. And for the vision you've had for this, do you think that was 1200 on your radar? Did you have numbers in your head? You're like, if we, you know, year two, we could be at 600. Did you have?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And a store, you know, store count was kind of my main driving, which now I've learned that that's actually not a great metric to go off of. Mm. It's not so much how many stores you're in, it's how well you're selling in the stores that you're in.
Yep.
So I was misguided a little bit at the start.
Because some stores might not move any units, but it's a store that
correct, adds right? to your total. You got a door, so it adds to your total, but it's not really doing anything, right? Well, that's not helping you.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's hurting you because now if the product gets dated, you got to replace it. And
yep.
And so, yeah, I had all these big goals, you know, quitting my job in 2020, of where we're going to be a year from now, 2 years from now. And truthfully, I thought we'd be a lot further ahead year four.
How do you deal with that?
That's tough. Yeah. That's when your reality is so far from your expectation. That's been one of the biggest challenges I've dealt with as an entrepreneur. Mm. And I think part of it was naivety. I didn't understand how difficult this industry is.
Yeah.
But the other part of it is, you know, we've faced a lot of adversity that in, you know, a lot of cases hasn't been fully in our control.
Yep.
You know, the pandemic hit us. Mm-hmm. We were using a manufacturing partner. There was one company in Canada that we could find that could help us make this. And we outgrew them pretty quickly. And then we had no way to grow our company. Like we got to a point, I looked everywhere in Canada and the US and should have done this research sooner, but no one else could make the product for us. This pouch is so unique because I designed this with freezer paper and a curling iron in my kitchen, right? Welding it together. So it's a very unique design. We have a patent on it now, but it's unique. There's environmental benefits.
Yep.
But because of that uniqueness, it's very difficult to fill a beverage into this container.
Right.
And no one has the equipment for it.
Mm.
So about a year, year and a half into our business, growth is okay. We're doing a couple hundred thousand in revenue.
Yep.
Not profitable yet, of course, not even close. But we hit a roadblock because there was no way to scale the company any further. We physically didn't have enough product.
Mm.
And so that was the next big pivot for us, Jeff, is was never in the business plan to do this, but we had to build our own manufacturing line.
No way.
Starting in 2021, we started laying out the plans to build our own manufacturing line, come up with the financing for it, because it was either we're going to go to business because we cannot, like I'd get a $40,000 purchase order and I couldn't fill it.
Mm.
Like I'd have to call my distributor or the retailer and be like, I'm sorry. Like I would beg my manufacturer for more. I'd be like, we'll pay overtime. I was living in BC effectively. Rob and my business partner and I would drive back and forth to British Columbia to work the line on this manufacturing line. Like we'd work it for free just to learn how it worked and try to help them produce more product, right?
And the partners don't like that. When they call to like, here's my $40,000 order, and when you can't deliver.
Yes.
And they have shelf space that needs to be filled.
Yep.
It's not a good spot to be.
It's not a good spot to be. It makes you look like an amateur, right?
Yep.
And that was, they're like, well, if you can't fill it, we'll go to your competitor who can.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah, a year into the business, that's the roadblock that we got to, Jeff, is things were going okay.
Yeah.
You know, we got this new beverage. It's selling pretty good in grocery stores because it's unique. People like it. They like the taste. It's working for them. Mm-hmm. So that's going pretty good. But there was no line of sight for us to really grow the company because we've didn't have the capability to actually produce more product.
Hmm. So you built it?
We built a manufacturing line from scratch.
In
Calgary.
No way.
Yeah. So we have the first production line of its kind in North America, actually.
No way.
We have equipment that's never been in Canada before. And this was not in the business plan. I have no background in manufacturing, Jeff.
Hmm.
So this was another one of those moments like we talked about where if I had a plan B, I would have taken the escape hatch.
Mm.
I think we would have.
Right? Yeah. You've been pushed to spots where...
Yeah. This was one of those moments where, you know, imagine you start a business, you know, you're a year in, it's going okay, but your choices are you go out of business or you got to spend $1 million+ on a manufacturing line that you have no idea how to design. You've never done it before. You don't know if it's going to work, right? Yeah. This is an R&D project, right? Because no one's built a line at scale for these pouches. That was the dilemma that we were faced with.
Hmm.
And it's the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard to raise money. It's so everything was coming up against us.
So, you know, now it's laughable. I ask you what it's like to spend $10,000.
Yes.
And you're probably thinking in your head, this dummy doesn't know what I really did.
Yeah. Well, that's... I've thought about this a lot too, and you can, I'm sure you can relate to this, Jeff, but in the beginning days, yeah, $500 felt like it might as well have been $1 million.
Yeah.
Right? But you become more desensitized as your business grows.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're necessarily making more profit. Like, we have a long way to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, that $10,000, the feeling of it was the same as the $1 million, right? We just got into a different stage in the business.
Mm.
Yeah. You develop a tolerance for the
more zeros.
The zeros.
Crazy. So here we are today. What's it looking like? Like, what does the business look like in your eyes?
Yeah. So, you know, here we are today.
Sorry, random question. Did you win something?
We won the Made in Alberta Awards recently
for
best beverage, best non-alcoholic beverage.
Was there anything else in the past? Did you guys win anything?
We won a Sobeys Award, best local supplier. Yeah, okay. Those are the two big honors that we've been graced with.
Cool. I couldn't remember if I actually saw something like an article or something that I can't remember. That's what I was asking. So anyways, where you are today, what are you seeing? What are you feeling?
Yeah. So truthfully, you know, we started building that production line in 2021 and it did not go as planned, Jeff. It was a very turbulent experience. I'll answer your question, but I'll just back up. I have one story that I think is very, very relevant. So we're about 4 or 5 months into building this production line. You know, I signed the lease, I have the space, I'm managing all these contractors, I order the equipment, and things are just getting out of control, right? Contractors aren't showing up on time. We're over budget, over schedule. So my dad, God bless him, he comes in to help me, right? Taking time out of his business to come and help me. And he'd had a broken foot at the time. And this will lead into the answer to your question. But so he's ripping around on one of those scooters. You know, he's up on the scooter.
Yeah.
Well, contractor leaves early one day and we're rushing out after him. And there was this pallet he told me to move multiple times. I'd left it kind of in the middle of the warehouse and I hadn't gotten around to moving it. Well, as we're rushing out, his front wheel on the scooter catches on the pallet. He goes over the handlebars, breaks both his arms. I'm there with him.
What?
So here's my dad. He's got a broken leg and two broken arms, right? We rush him to the hospital and it was the darkest moment of my entrepreneurial.
Like helping you. He's
now helping me. Mm-hmm. And now he's got three broken limbs, right? Mm-hmm. I can't begin to tell you how awful I felt. I've never experienced the darkness like that, feeling of failure that day. And I wake up the next morning to a text from my dad that says, there's an electric wheelchair getting delivered to the office today. See you soon. We have work to do.
Animal.
What an animal, right? So I tell that story because I learned so much again from him, right? And this year, 2023, has been very challenging, right? We've had a lot of issues with our production line. We had, a bunch of defective pouches we had to go through. It's been the year didn't go as expected because we've had a lot of challenges.
Yeah.
But the essence of our company is what, you know, my dad did that day, right? Is no matter what we're going through, we're going to keep pushing forward.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finally getting some momentum again. Mm. We just got into Superstore. Mm. So
congrats.
We got the manufacturing line working now. Mm. We just got into Superstore. We got into our 1200th store across Canada. And the next few years, you know, where the business is going is we're going to take that spirit of my dad. We're going to push through these challenges and we're going to grow this thing to the moon.
Hmm. Crazy, man.
Yeah, that was a wild one.
People deal with like dips, right? Moments in time where you're like adversity and whatever. Do you feel like your path has been more bumpy? Do you feel like it's been an even split between bumps and like positive movement?
Yeah, I think about this a lot. I'm sure everyone would say that their journey is harder.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've done something innovative,
right?
No one's ever made a drink in a pouch like this. And so that was a little naive in a lot of ways. I do think we've had far more challenges than the average startup beverage company. The flip side of that is because of the pouch, because we're so unique, I think we've been given a lot of opportunities that if we were in a can or a bottle, that they we wouldn't have had.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably fairly equal. We've had a lot of blessings, you know. I won the parental lottery for one, right? Mm. And had a lot of amazing opportunities, you know, the Superstore buyer giving us, you know, a shot, and the Sobeys, you know, Gary giving us a shot in the local Sobeys program. Mm-hmm. But we've also faced some incredible adversity for a young company that I don't think was standard. Mm. But that's made us resilient, and I think that's what's ultimately going to lead to our success.
Do you, as I'm sitting here listening to this, as you got this production line and you can make these pouches, it feels like, would you ever package for other?
Yeah.
Like it feels like it's like a contract brewery idea is like the back of my head.
100%.
That can be a possibility.
That's a possibility now. So it's a whole nother business model that, you know, we never thought we would have. Mm-hmm. We're not quite there yet.
But
you know,
it feels like when you're the only thing in North America that's doing this, you feel like there's somebody out there that's looking for a solution that
for sure,
just like you were.
I think we're going to have a manufacturing business one day that's just as big as our beverage company. Mm-hmm. Right. So again, as hard as that decision was to do our own manufacturing line, something we never wanted to do, right? I had to you know, sign my house away and stuff to get the debt to buy this equipment.
Literally, that's what you did?
I had to do, because I had to do a personal guarantee on my house.
Because people, you know, I never ask like personal, like finance questions because it's like, but you know, I'm always thinking, I'm like, how do you go after that kind of, because as I have my little idea and I'm trying to I'm going to spend on X, right? It's like,
Well, and these are the things I think more people need to talk about too, right? Because, it's a tough topic. But when we were like, we weren't profitable yet when we needed to start.
Didn't have a million in the bank that you could just like.
No, we weren't even doing a million in revenue, right? Like we were doing hundreds of thousands in revenue, selling into 500 stores or whatever. So I go to the banks and they don't laugh at me; they're encouraging, but they're like, okay, like we're gonna need a personal guarantee. Mm. So my lawyer is like, I do not recommend you sign this. This is not a good idea, but I did it anyways. Cause again, I don't have a plan B, right? I lit that on fire. This is it. Mm-hmm. But again, that's where the magic happens, right? Mm-hmm. And now we have this manufacturing line that's never been done before. Mm-hmm. It's still far from perfect. There's still lots of things we got to improve on, but we have a piece of technology now that's unique to us, right? Mm-hmm. And opens up all these other opportunities from taking that risk and being willing to put in the work.
I love that. I love that perspective. I love that that escape hatch idea.
Yes,
it's that one's going to stick with me. So, yeah, I appreciate it
for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, you're doing the same thing, right? Look at this podcast.
Yeah,
you know, 99 episodes in. I'm sure there's lots of times where you questioned if you wanted to keep doing this.
Yeah, totally. But it's just work.
It's putting in the work.
Yep.
Yeah.
This has been a cool one.
Thank you.
Like really cool, man.
Yeah, this has been.
And I think you and I crossed paths at Connor's event.
Yes, that's right.
I'm sure, but I was there with, you know Mike Klassen.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I was there hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And that's how there's like four of us in this little area. And like, that's it. I met you for like 17 seconds and then scurried away. So to actually sit here, I've heard about this. So to actually sit here and like experience your story, it's really cool, man.
Well, thank you so much. This is such an honor. You know, I've been seeing your content on LinkedIn and social media. You've done such a beautiful job. You're a great interviewer, which is very difficult to do. I've been in your shoes before. Mm. So I just really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. You know how I end this? I end the show with one question. When I say Calgary, where's your head go?
Greatest place to live in the world and the future for great entrepreneurs. I really, really believe that. This city... something so special about this city, right? When I go and visit Vancouver, Toronto, I love those cities too, but I end up missing home, right? And I think Calgary and, you know, Canada or Alberta has been known for primarily oil and gas and the Stampede, but now I think we're going to be known for great innovators, right?
Yeah.
Some of these people you've had on the podcast are just unbelievable, some of the best in the world at what they do. And so that's where I see Calgary going. This is going to be, it's going to be a city known for some of the greatest innovators on the planet.
Yeah. I agree. What's going to be cool with you is just catching up in 5-10 years, just to like, I've recently thought about this a little bit. This is like, the show's like, there's a legacy play, right?
Yes.
I've caught you at a time and in a moment, right?
Yes.
You're dealing with a bunch of things. You know, I have this weird idea of like in a decade from now, either bringing everyone through again.
See, that would be cool.
As like a, like an update, like something. I feel like there'd be an I just feel like there's going to be an interesting story with you in years to come.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And I think that would be an amazing concept. You know, look at even, you know, Gersh, right? Yep. Zeno Renewables, when they were at the 4-year mark 4 years ago, because I think they're at 8 years now, their journey looked entirely different. I think they were like 5 employees. Now they're 200, right? It's a totally different story. So I'm hopeful that if I keep putting in the work, you know, four or 5 years from now, it'll be something similar.
It's cool, man. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your time. It's truly an honor.
It has been a fun one. Thank you.
Thank you.